It's the Healthy Woman Show on WJR with Marie Osborne and Dr. Jonathan Zaden, presented by Women's Excellence. Now here's your host, Marie Osborne.
Dr. Zaden, almost summertime, and now we're spending a lot of time outdoors, on vacation, away from home. So for women with allergies and bladder control problems, this can be a bit of an inconvenience.
You know, I see this all the time. We've talked about bladder control things so many times. You know, we're now offering allergy testing, and the reason we're doing it is because that is, you know, turning into a large component of what causes bladder control problems. So people start their allergies, and then they start coughing and sneezing and doing all those things, and they tell me that's when they leak, right? So we've always characteristically asked those questions. Do you leak when you cough and sneeze? And what I realized is that I'm asking the question, but I'm not solving the problem. So what we're trying to do now is work on that, looking at a solution with allergy testing.
And along with that, we're going to be talking about Infertility Awareness Week. And as always, we'll be putting Dr. Zaden on the spot for Ask the Doc segment. That's coming up on the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. We're back on the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR with Dr. Jonathan Zaden. Now, Dr. Zaden, allergy is a huge part of general health for women, and it impacts the work that you do, of course. Tell us how.
One in every three, 33% of people have allergies. It's the one in three rule that we have in medicine. And you know, the thing is that most people have these allergies, and oftentimes they're trying to take stuff over the counter. And people have told me, well, that's the only, you know, thing I know how to do. The problem is that, you know, allergies are no different than every other aspect in medicine, right? The first thing you have to do is take a thorough history, and then you have to kind of make a diagnosis. And once you make the diagnosis, then you can start a treatment plan. And with allergies, it could either be to kind of sensitize yourself to that and desensitize yourself. So there's ways of doing that, or avoidance. But people don't do either, right? I mean, so many times, I mean, people are like, I don't know, I'm allergic to something. And they keep doing it over and over again. I mean, I'll hear people that are, you know, been allergic to something for 3 or 4 years. It's ruined their lives. And they find out it's down in their pillow, you know, when it's all said and done. After they've had a horrendous pneumonia or whatever, they decide to allergy test them based on their history. So it's really important that we make a diagnosis here. Like that's the biggest thing. That's why we decided to get into it at Women's Excellence, is because we were like, we need to start really making these diagnoses, you know, a real treatment approach for these people, because, you know, we're not going to keep everyone dry from a bladder control problem if they're sneezing and laughing all the time, right? We're stressing out our repairs doing that. So, you know, I think this is going to be something that women are really going to benefit from.
So what do you test for?
You know, we test, there's actually a panel, and the panel tests for 72 different things. I mean, I could go over all of them, but that would take up the whole show. So, I mean, just off the top, I mean, you know, we test for certain types of grasses, molds, trees, mites, you know, food items like soy, milk, shrimp, peanuts, wheat, you know, the celiac type stuff. So we're testing for all of those different things. Again, there's 72 different things, and it's pretty comprehensive. That doesn't mean that there's not something that you're allergic to that we're not going to test for. So, you know, it's just because it's 72 things, there's a lot of things in the environment that you could be allergic to. But I think it's a very good comprehensive list. As I kind of did my research on this, I think you're going to cover most of it with the testing that can be done right in the office.
So how does the testing actually work, though?
Well, you know, back in the day, people got injections, right? I mean, you know, you had to get an injection of each separate antigen in your skin. I mean, you can only imagine. I mean, you know, sometimes people would get 20 shots, or they would do this, you know, 72, panel over 3 or 4 different visits, right? That was pretty tough. Now we have like a kind of proprietary different mechanism of doing it, where there's actually like a board that we use. And we use 3 of them. There's 24 in each board. And then we just kind of roll that board over your skin. And it has some, you know, minorly sharp, like little tentacles, but they're not, it's not uncomfortable. It's a weird sensation, but it's not something that's painful. And again, there's no needles required at all. So this is a pretty straightforward way of doing it. And what happens is that we now have those boards. So we just document where we put which board, and then we can look on a little panel, and we know exactly what you're allergic to based on the location of the sensitivity.
So you're looking for redness then?
Yeah, redness, you know, what we call, you know, I mean, we're doctors, Marie. So oh, we call it erythema. But yes, we look for redness. We call it, you know, we look for induration or something that's raised. But we like to, you know, we like to use fancy words for this so that we sound important.
Erythema. I'm going to remember that one.
Erythema and induration.
Induration. Good. I'll use those in a sentence later on. So how long does it take to get the test results?
Well, the test results really can be, we will know in about, you know, about 48 hours. So we do the test and then, you know, we'll start to like identify stuff. Even as close to 20 minutes to an hour, we might start to see things. And then by 48 hours, we'll know what's been there or what isn't there. So it's very quick. So this isn't something that you have to, you know, it's not like, you know, some of these tests were, I mean, I saw someone in the office today, she had her test. I kid you not, she had her test 2.5 months ago, and she was coming to me to get the results. Now, there were multitudes of reasons, and it wasn't from a women's excellence perspective. She actually had two or three things for work, and it delayed her from coming in, and then she couldn't connect in our virtual platform, and we just didn't see her, and it was 2.5 months ago. Here, you're going to know, I mean, we're going to have them come back right while it's on their mind, come back and see the results, and that's the beauty of this.
And then you have to, of course, do the treatment. So what are we talking about in terms of treatment?
You know, there's lots of different treatments now, which I was really, really pleased to see, because I think most of the time people were like, well, great, even if I find out what it is, how am I going to treat? Well, we actually have sublingual therapy now. And so when you have sublingual therapy, you're just basically taking like a little shot of medicine every day. And, you know, that will take care of it. And it's in a liquid form. You don't have to do a whole lot of things. So you don't have to go for all these shots and all the other things that you used to do. So, I mean, I think this is, you know, it's a commitment, because, you know, you're doing these things for like, you know, it could be up to, you know, a year. But you know, it's simple to do, and it's, you know, becomes just part of your routine, and you desensitize yourself to these things. And then, you know, ultimately you have a better life experience.
I was just going to say, I bet that improves quality of life, which of course is always what you're after. I know in your practice is quality of life.
Well, you know, this was one of those things where, again, you know, we'll talk about, you know, bladder control and all the things that we talk about at Women's Excellence that's in the, you know, in the gynecologic realm. But this was one of those things where we looked at, wait, let's go upstream a little bit. I mean, part of the reason that these people are coming to us is because they have allergies. Why are we not addressing that? The other item that we have, which I think is really important, is that, you know, with me doing so much endometriosis work and with us starting Endometriosis Treatment Center of America, like we discussed before, we realized that one of the big things that endometriosis has in common is we believe there's some immunological issues with that. And we believe that we should start doing allergy testing, because we know that it's more frequent that people have allergies. And so, you know, sometimes as you start new things, it kind of spurheads, you know, looking at the things that you're already doing and maybe even refining them. And I think that was, you know, part of what's, I think, great about Women's Excellence. We're comprehensive, and we keep becoming more comprehensive because we start to see, you know, through a different lens now. We're looking at the whole patient. And when you look at the whole patient, you ultimately start looking at things like allergy.
And when we talk about quality of life, we're certainly talking about bladder control problems. And we're going to take a deep dive into that when we come back here on the Healthy Woman Show on WJR. Back on the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR with Dr. Jonathan Zaden. Dr. Zaden, when you say bladder control problems, I'm sure that it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but what type of bladder issues do you see most in your office?
Well, you know, I think the number one thing that we see, number one and two, would probably be overactive bladder or urinary frequency. You know, just people that say, I got to go. You know, I think I've said this on shows in the past, you know, where people are like, I got to go. There was an ad, I got to go. That's probably number one. And I think a close number two is what we call stress urinary incontinence. Anything that, you know, causes stress to your body. So if you lift up something heavy, if you cough, if you sneeze, like we talked about earlier with allergy, you know, any of those types of things where you increase your intra-abdominal pressure will cause you to leak urine. And I think that's number two. And then there's the other ones where, you know, we see a lot of, because we do endometriosis, and it's, you know, people that have pain or urinary retention, things called interstitial cystitis, where, you know, people don't really know what's wrong with their bladder. They just know they're having a lot of problems with it. And oftentimes it doesn't get diagnosed. That's a condition that, you know, we see a lot of, that it's not super prevalent, but it's certainly something that we see. And then there's the, you know, the prolapses of the vaginal vault, where people just have, you know, tissue that's either bulging down or maybe they don't feel it yet, but there's a loss of support of the bladder neck and the bladder wall, which ultimately leads to a lot of those things. It can be frequency, it can be urge incontinence, you know, where you got to go right now and you can't wait, or it could just be, you know, like the standard frequency overactive bladder, or the stress incontinence too, because there's a loss of support. So, you know, the final thing that we see, it's just something that really doesn't get diagnosed very much, is called intrinsic sphincter deficiency. I think it's a relatively common disorder, but we just don't diagnose it very much, and it's almost never talked about. But it's urinary dribbling. So people that have like just a minor leakage kind of all the time. You know, they're always wearing a pad. They may change the pad a couple of times a day, but in certain positions, they just dribble a little bit of urine, just enough to make them feel uncomfortable, and certainly enough that make them wear a light days pad or something along those lines. And that's a condition where the little sphincter muscle that, you know, keeps your bladder continent and keeps anything from dribbling out gets a little weak. And without that little bit of tension where the muscle kind of contracts, it'll cause you this dribbling of urine. And so, you know, that's something that we test for. And we do that with a test called urodynamics. So if you're, you know, experiencing any of those things, we have a simple test in our office to do called urodynamics that will kind of give us an idea of exactly what your bladder's doing.
I can only imagine this affects every aspect of daily life for so many of your patients.
Well, I mean, you know, we talked about it earlier with allergy, right? I mean, the reason we got into allergy testing, right, was because we were finding that some of the other disease processes that we treat, such as endometriosis or bladder control problems, are directly related to people coughing, sneezing, and doing all those things. And so, you know, this is a function, this is a big quality of life issue. I mean, you know, I've said this a lot of times, and I think that people would really resonate with this. You know, we congratulate everyone, our puppies, our children, everyone, when they can hold their bladder. That's our number one thing. And if you can't do it as an adult, not only do you really not want to publicize it or talk about it, right? But also, you're trying to hide it, right? You don't even want to talk to the doctor about it. It's not been until the last few years when people are on the radio like myself talking about this thing, you know, that people will really, you know, resonate with it and say, hey, I have this. So it's kind of a shameful thing to leak urine. I mean, you know, I mean, if anybody on their radio has done it or knows somebody that has done it, I mean, you know, if you're at a baseball game and all of a sudden you leak and you think that people can notice you, you are out of there right now, right? So does it affect your life? Absolutely. And if you're at that same baseball game and there's only one port-a-john and it's halfway across the school field and you got to go right now, it affects whether you might go to the next game. That's big. I mean, you know, that might be your son or your daughter's game, or it could be your grandkids' game. Big deal. So yes, it affects people significantly.
So how do the bladder problems occur? And is it something that just happens to older women, or do you see younger women in the practice as well?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things of why bladder problems occur. The first thing is just age, right? I mean, we're, you know, bodies are mechanical. I mean, you've heard me say this before, right? So, you know, we wear out over time, right? And we're very clear on that. You know, people, you know, they expect to have maybe a hip problem or a knee problem, and they can understand that that joint wears out over time, right? But they don't think about organs wearing out. They wear out too, right? It's not so much just the organ itself or the muscle wall of the organ, but it's also the support mechanisms around the organ, right? So bladder problems really occur because there's a loss of functional support around the bladder neck or around the bladder itself. It could be an intramuscular problem, or it could be a denervation problem to the bladder. So, you know, there might be the main reasons that it happens. And, you know, as time goes on, our bodies get less blood supply. And just like we get wrinkles on our face, or, you know, we get, you know, extra skin, the bladder, you know, has a tendency to have some deficits along the aging process as well.
Now, I'm sure that there are surgeries that can fix a lot of these bladder problems. But what if a woman does not want surgery? Does she have options?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first, you know, we always try anticholinergics first, which are, you know, medicines to help with bladder control. And then we have things called MCELA now. I think I did a show on that a while back where we talked about pelvic floor strengthening. And then, you know, we have some of the minimally invasive surgical options. Like, for example, what we were talking about, intrinsic sphincter deficiency, if you have that dribbling problem, That could be just a couple of small injections, no surgery, no cuts, no anything. We do it under some anesthesia, so we might do it in a surgery center, but I mean, it's certainly not surgical, right? You go home the same day, you're doing stuff the same day, you could go to the mall after you had it done. And then there's even like little neurotransmitters where we put a small little neurotransmitter that's like the size of a zip drive. I think everybody now knows what a little USB zip drive is. You know, we can actually implant that in the buttock area and run a couple of leads to your bladder, and it's like a pacemaker for your bladder. So, I mean, there's a lot of great options. For overactive bladder now, a lot of my patients don't want to, you know, medicines are expensive now, Marie. You know, I mean, it could cost somebody $100 to you know, a month to get one of these specialty medicines that works for them. So now people come in every 6 months, 6 to 12 months, and they get Botox. And sometimes after they retrain their bladder with Botox in their bladder, it gets better. They always try to solicit me to give them Botox, you know, in their forehead and everything else. But, you know, I joke with them back. I say, you know, I don't do any of that, although we do. But we do, when we do Botox for the bladder, it's an FDA approved item. So it's not something that, you know, it's experimental, because you hear people, I wouldn't do that, that's experimental. It's FDA approved. And we've been using it for, I think it's been about 12 years now. Don't quote me on that specifically for anybody that's looking me up on the internet. But I think it's been about 12 years we've been using it. So it's, I mean, there's a lot of options.
What about the impact of having children on your bladder? I hear so many of my friends talk about that. Oh, it's never been the same since I had kids. You know, I just have more bladder problems.
Right. Well, I mean, I think, you know, like I talked about, you know, the aging process is one thing that can happen to your bladder. And the other thing is just trauma. And, you know, having a child through the vaginal vault causes a certain amount of trauma. It can also cause some denervation, right? So some of those nerves can get stretched or injured, right? We know that that happens in other parts of our body, but we just don't think about it happening there, because we think of, you know, a vaginal birth being a natural process. But, you know, naturally, it can cause some trauma, right? I mean, you know, we're very familiar with the trauma that it can cause with, you know, a laceration, but we just don't think about the long-term, you know, difficulty with a baby going through and maybe stretching the tissue. We call that attenuation. So the tissue gets attenuated, meaning that it's not really broken, but it's stretched and damaged. And then what happens is, over time, with things like allergies, when you cough and sneeze, or people that work in factories that are constantly picking up heavy items repetitively and stuff like that, that can worsen it. Or just the aging process in conjunction with having a baby previously in an attenuated state. You age, it gets a little more attenuated, and eventually, you know, you see a functional problem.
Well, while we're talking about babies, Dr. Zaden, our next segment, we're going to be talking about infertility awareness, such a big problem for so many women, especially now that women really are, frankly, waiting longer to have their families. We'll be talking about that when we come back here on the Healthy Woman Show with Dr. Jonathan Zaden from Women's Excellence. Welcome back to the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. Dr. Jonathan Zaden, always alongside from Women's Excellence. And Dr. Zaden, I know you see a lot of patients that suffer from infertility because of myriad of problems. Why don't you talk a little bit about what some of those problems are that can cause serious infertility problems for women?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, right now, I mean, you know, it seems like there's a week for everything, but, you know, it's Infertility Awareness Week here in April. And I think that the reason that it gets some attention today is that, you know, 10% of women, one in every 10, you know, have a problem, you know, getting pregnant, right? And so, you know, and there's a myriad of those reasons for that. And, you know, the big one is, you know, are there ovulation problems? And there's a whole different grouping of things that could cause problems with ovulation. Ovulation is the ability to produce an egg, right, every month. And so some women just don't do that. And a lot of reasons that they don't do it is because they may not be metabolically healthy, right? They may, you know, people that have a problem with their thyroid, or problem with their blood sugar management, or diabetes, or even insulin resistance, where they have problems with their, how they manage their blood sugars, but they don't have necessarily diabetes. You know, we see that with people who maybe gain some extra weight, or, you know, we see hair growth or things like that in different places. And that can lead to something called polycystic ovarian syndrome. And so those types of reasons can do it. Stress can do it. You know, people that have diseases such as like, anorexia, for example, that, you know, really control their weight. If they get their body fat too low, they can stop ovulation. And then if it's not an ovulatory problem, it could be a husband problem. That's another issue. So if your partner is, you know, isn't, you know, healthy enough to produce the adequate amount of sperm. And then there's also, you know, disease processes that can cause scarring or damage to the fallopian tubes or the intrauterine cavity. And that's be like, you know, things like pelvic inflammatory disease, maybe a pelvic infection that somebody had in the past. Endometriosis is, you know, something that's near and dear to my heart. And that certainly causes infertility with inflammation in the pelvis. You know, those are the main reasons.
Now, how does somebody know that they're infertile? There was a rule of thumb back in the day that if you've been trying for a year and no luck, that's when you need to seek help. Is that still the case?
Yeah, infertility is designed, as described as, adequate intercourse episodes on a frequent and regular basis for greater than a year without a pregnancy. So, you know, that's the definition of infertility. I think we don't really do that as much as we used to years ago, follow that guideline. And the reason we don't is, you know, number one, I think people are a little more impatient. But number two, we have better, better diagnostic testing, right? So, you know, we come to the conclusion much faster because we can test for it faster. So, you know, now I think it's more like about 6 months.
Talk a little bit about the workup that's involved when somebody comes and you've identified them as somebody who has infertility problems. So what do you do?
Well, the workup is pretty standard, and it's standard across the board just about for any medical condition. But in this one, it's pretty clear cut. First of all, you get a good thorough history because you want to find out how long have they really been trying? Have they been trying with the same partner or other partners? Have they had children in the past and now they can't? You know, that's another question. And have they had miscarriages? Because some people will come in for infertility because they think they're infertile. What they really have is recurrent miscarriage. They've gotten pregnant multiple times. They just never have had a baby, but they consider that as infertility. That's not the case. That's a separate problem. The next thing is that, you know, I like to get a laboratory analysis to look at their hormone levels. Because that's going to be number one paramount to determine whether or not things are even working adequately. And then I get a pelvic ultrasound to look at the anatomy. I want to know, is the uterus normal? Do we see swollen fallopian tubes? What is the architecture of the ovary? Does it look like there is an ovulation problem or a non-ovulation problem? Those types of things. And then if those things don't lead us in a direction, we oftentimes will look right into the uterus, again, looking for any uterine abnormalities or any other abnormalities. And then if we still don't have a cause, then we start to think about laparoscopy, where we look inside the belly, looking at the fallopian tubes, making sure there's no scarring. Sometimes people will have, you know, minimal symptoms, but they have, you know, scar tissue around their tubes from a previous infection that they may not have even known about, you know, or they've forgotten about because it happened when they were young. So those are the things. And then obviously, if there's some advanced stage inflammatory disease like endometriosis or anything like that, then we would go towards a robotic surgery. And if there's any, we oftentimes will look for immunologic factors that might, you know, lead to, you know, infertility. More of that is kind of based on recurrent miscarriage than infertility. But, you know, there are a few.
What are some of the treatment options?
I mean, the big thing is that, you know, sometimes we just need to stimulate kind of, you know, what I call jumpstart the ovary to ovulate, right? Sometimes we just give some medicines because people are close to ovulation, but maybe they have a small metabolic factor that's not allowing them to do that. And that, you know, if that doesn't help, then, you know, then we start to look towards minor surgical options to evaluate in more detail. And then, you know, if we still can't achieve a pregnancy after, you know, a full laboratory analysis, ultrasound, laparoscopy, finding out their tubes are open or closed and they find that they're open, then we start thinking about maybe in vitro fertilization. That's an option. And then there's a myriad of different ways that we can do that. Sometimes there's an egg that's not an effective egg. So we have to use egg donor. Sometimes there's sperm from a couple that is not appropriate. And we do, intrauterine insemination or in vitro fertilization. So there's a couple of different options that we can do, you know, depending on the specific case. Again, medicine is not cookie cutter, right? There's so many things that can go wrong. And sometimes it's a multiplicity of things that go wrong. So sometimes there could be a poor semen analysis and also a hormonal imbalance in the female or endometriosis in the female. So we have to look for all of it. And, you know, I say this over and over again as a boring, radio show host, but you have to be comprehensive. right? So it's a comprehensive standard workup that you have to do, and that's what's going to get you the answer. That's what we, you know, really subscribe to at Women's Excellence, and that's what's going to lead to, you know, getting you a baby, and that's what we're looking for, is that outcome.
So if you or someone you know is struggling to get pregnant, you can find help. You can send them the podcast of this episode. You can find that at the website, www.womensexcellence.com, or live chat with a team member from Women's Excellence. Coming up next, Ask the Doc. Anything can happen in this segment, and that's next here on The Healthy Woman Show on WJR. We're back with The Healthy Woman Show here on WJR with Dr. Jonathan Zaden and Jessica Roussette from Women's Excellence. She's the patient outreach coordinator for the segment that we really like to call Ask the Doc, because Jessica reaches deep into that mailbag and pulls out some very interesting questions from clients and patients of Dr. Zaden. So, Jessica, I'm going to let you take it away.
Yeah, last month, everything was about endo. So this month, we're all over the place. This covers everything. So, you know, be prepared. Some of them are a little tough. So I'll maybe start with an easier one. Is bleeding between periods normal? And should I be concerned about cancer?
It is not normal to bleed between periods, although it can happen from time to time. So I don't want to scare the listener. So that's the one thing that, you know, we have to be cognizant of, is just because I say that it's not normal doesn't mean that you absolutely have something wrong. Because, you know, there's a time period between people listen to this show and they tell me, and then they kind of get nervous because they hear the answer. But it's not normal, and it should be evaluated. And it can be cancer. It could be a polyp. It could be cancer. It could be a small growth inside the uterus. It could be just a hormonal imbalance. But, you know, it could be a cancer. And certainly as a trained, you know, gynecologist, we should be evaluating people that, you know, have bleeding in between their periods, for sure.
All right. Straightforward. Next one. You'll like this one. I enjoy sex, but I can never reach an orgasm. Is it me? Is it him? What do I do?
I think this is a common event. You know, obviously a little weird for me to talk about on the radio, right? But I want to add something to the last question before I move on to this one, because I think this is a little more of a complicated question. But if you're bleeding through periods, again, that should be evaluated. But if there's ever postmenopausal bleeding, you should never consider, if you're in the menopause and you start bleeding once a month or whatever, that to be a period. You should always be evaluated. That's something that's serious, and you should definitely be evaluated. Now, you can't achieve an orgasm with standard intercourse. And I think that's relatively common. We talked about this earlier about bladder control and denervation from childbirth and so on and so forth. That can stretch some of the nerves and cause some difficulties with the actual experience itself. Also, as people age, the blood supply of the organs around, you know, your sexual organs, such as your clitoris and your anterior vaginal wall, can change. So, you know, those are some main things. And then there's the other, you know, the other things that you can't really, you know, adjust for. And that's just, you know, what are your personal responsibilities? You know, I mean, you know, people talk to me all the time, like, you know, when they say they've lost their sex drive, you know, during the time when they, you know, are, you know, busiest and most active with their kids that require a lot of help. And then, you know, as their kids grow up and things kind of change a little bit, even though they've aged a little bit, their sex life improves because they have a little bit more time and less things on their mind, right? So they can kind of enjoy that process a little more. If it's a nerve or a vascular problem, if it's a straightforward nerve problem, there's not a whole lot you can do, especially if it's upstream, meaning that it's far away from the external organ. But if it's a vascular problem, like decreased vascularity or just nerve ending problem, you can use now the O-shot. You know, it's where we do platelet-rich plasma and we eject it into the vaginal wall or the clitoris. And it definitely dramatically improves the sensation and the ability to orgasm. That's why they named it the O-shot, and it works pretty well. The other things that you can do is you can start to use vaginal estrogen to try to help with that, to increase some vascularity along those lines, if you're especially in a little bit older age group.
Who can get the O-shot? Is it just for menopausal women, postmenopausal, earlier? Doesn't matter?
No, you could do it in anyone. I would say the majority of people get that, you know, when they're probably in their, you know, late 30s and above. You know, you don't see too many people having that problem much before that. And when they do have that problem much before that, I think most of that is not just nerve. It's just that they have a lot of responsibilities at that time with children. You know what I mean? Because I definitely see a difference statistically. I mean, you know, women that have young children versus women that don't have young children in their, you know, early 30s. I mean, you typically see that a little bit more frequently.
And then how often should you get it? I only ask because this question has come up a lot. So I want to get as much info out there as we can. But is it something they should get done every year or?
Well, that's there's, you know, the O-shot's not an FDA approved therapy. So, you know, so there really isn't, you know, an answer for that. My experience is that, you know, you probably last for about a year to 2 years or maybe even longer. You know, I mean, sex is no different than anything else. I mean, you know, once you get to a certain way of doing it and you get to that experience, you know, it even with decreased vascularity, you may still get a good result. And I would tell you that, you know, it's certainly not going to, you know, harm you to touch that area up because the PRP helps to stimulate growth factors in that tissue, right? And if the tissue is more receptive to sensation, you're probably going to get more sensation. But, you know, again, all of this is going to, you know, is predicated on having a partner that you enjoy, you know, making sure that your life is stress-free, making sure that your body habitus is where you want it to be. And you don't have, you know, there's what we call body shame where people just don't want to be seen, you know, when they're not clothed and things like that. Those all lead to decreased, you know, sexual orgasm, right? And so, you know, as a result of that, you got to kind of be taking all of those things into account.
That was great. I know that's going to help a lot of women. All right, next one. The outside of my vagina itches so bad that sometimes it even bleeds. What can I do?
You need to be evaluated.
Yeah.
So, for sure. you know, I feel like I'm Dr. Ruth here, you know. And so, you know, if this happens, you need to be evaluated immediately. Because, you know, this is something where you could have vulvar cancer, you could have pathologic conditions that can be treated. I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen, you know, down in that skin below. You could have a melanoma. You could have condyloma. There's a lot of things that could be causing that bleeding. You 100%, there should be no question that you need to be evaluated. That's not one of those things where you know, anytime you're having skin that's not normal skin, you need to be evaluated for that. Because, you know, too many times I see vulvar cancers. I diagnose precancers and cancers of the vulva all the time. So.
Yep. All right. Is it possible for your uterus to fall out after having a baby? And how can I avoid this? We kind of talked about this earlier.
Well,
it doesn't actually fall out, right?
Right. Yeah. No, it doesn't fall out. You know, it's connected by all the tissue. But what happens is the support mechanisms of the bladder, uterus, top portion of the uterus, cervix, they give way. And when those things happen, we call that uterovaginal prolapse. Okay. You can also get, by the way, if you've had a hysterectomy, you can also get vaginal vault prolapse. If there's no uterus above the top of the vagina, those same support mechanisms, if they fail, the vagina can come out as well. But, you know, the uterus can come out. And I mean, you know, to some degree, it can come out completely where, you know, it can be out of your body by, you know, 8 inches. I mean, you know, so, and I've seen that, you know, somewhat, you know, frequently because I do that type of work and we do prolapse and complicated surgery and stuff. So, you know, it's not uncommon for us to see that. But, you know, in most cases, what will happen is after you have a baby, if it were to happen, sometimes that will strengthen a bit afterwards, but it can definitely prolapse down that you can feel it.
Jessica, thank you so much for all those questions. Awesome job. And some embarrassing questions, I think, for a lot of people to ask. So at least now you've broached the subject. And Dr. Zaden, great information as always. Dr. Zaden, tell us a little bit about, I know you've got a lot going on at your different locations. Tell me what is happening new at Women's Excellence.
You know, there's just so much going on right now. We committed a while back to, you know, better breast care. So we began a mammography program. We've now expanded that to become a radiologic program. We actually have now mammogram, ultrasound, bone density, body composition for weight loss in our practice, all under one roof in our Lake Orion campus. And then we have ultrasound machines all across the city, you know, in our other locations. But, you know, I think that's a really exciting new venture for our patients because, you know, now within the next, you know, 2 to 3 months, we'll be able to do breast biopsies and all the things that we need to do right in-house. So I think that's great because it certainly takes a lot of stress off people if you can go to some place that you trust. And also that's not so busy and congested like a hospital. I truly think that we're going to be different in the future. We're just not going to want to go to big congested places like we used to, even when this pandemic ends. So I think that's exciting. You know, Endometriosis Treatment Center of America, you know, we're in the process of, believe it or not, even though I've been doing this work for so long, and, you know, as, you know, we you know now that, you know, I've done more robotic excisions than anyone in the country for endometriosis. Believe it or not, it's taking forever to get online with the insurance companies under a new center, even though I do it every day. So we're still seeing patients every day for endometriosis, but it'll take another 2 to 3 months until we're fully credentialed with all those companies to see patients under that new umbrella. So we can still see patients at Women's Excellence like we always have. So there's no interruption, but, you know, that's, it's a little different. So, but we're going to open 2 locations, and that's super exciting. And then we've, you know, we're now going to have lab phlebotomy services at almost every office coming up soon. I think there's just a lot of great things going on, Marie.
And of course, there's lots of ways to get a hold of people. I know you do great work with your live chats. We were just talking with Jessica. I know that that's an important part of your practice. And of course, you can go to www.womensexcellence.com to get more information just in general about the practice, but also to find out about some of these live chats. And Jessica, people can just get that info right there, right?
Yep. You'll notice it's at the bottom right corner of your screen. You can even access it on your mobile device, and we can help.
Well, listen, I tell you, with this pandemic, it's been the toughest. I can tell you, in all the years that I've worked, this is the toughest time for, you know, having our employees answer the phones. We just can't get enough people. You know, everybody's getting exposed to COVID at some point, or, you know, and, you know, we're trying to play it safe, you know, at Women's Excellence, of course, the way we should, right? So, you know, if somebody has an exposure, they're out of the office and so on and so forth. So it really decimates, you know, the staff who are the front line and answering everybody's questions. So, you know, the live chat's a little bit more efficient. So, you know, please use that, look at our website and so on and so forth, and be patient with us at Women's Excellence, because we're not trying to not answer our phones. It's just that we get an enormous amount of phone calls, and you know, at this time, this is an unprecedented time with the with staffing with this pandemic. So I wanted to add one more thing to this, and I just wanted to let people know that we also do the O shot, and there is something, you know, you had asked me what's new. We have a new program called Women's Excellence Enhanced. They're currently building it in our Royal Oak location, and they're going to do things like PRP, the O shot for hair restoration. We'll use PRP as well, and some other cosmetic services such as, like, you know, Botox and fillers and things like that. And we'll probably even do our allergy testing out of that new location. So that's an exciting thing for women, especially because they can go to a place that they trust.
Once again, it's womensexcellence.com. Dr. Jonathan Zaden, thank you so much for all the great information. And of course, Jessica, as always, we appreciate your input as well. Thanks, Dr. Zaden.
Take care.
The Healthy Woman Show has been presented by Women's Excellence.